This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 355, Metaverse Kicks. Hello and welcome again to GamesAtWork.biz. This is your long-lost co-host, Michael Martin. I'm happy to be here with my other co-hosts to join you again for another great conversation of tech and business and games and fun and all kinds of good stuff. And there are people getting very, very scared here at the moment. So let's see why Andy is so scared. Why are you scared, Andy?
I'm not scared. I'm delighted to have you back. That was my... For the listeners in the audience who can't visually see us when we're recording, I was looking, that was my terrified look of excitement that you're back.
Love it.
You've given us free rein.
I thought it was my exciting look of terror.
Yeah, you've given us free rein for 2 weeks and just let us rip without any kind of supervision. So
Been good stuff too. Listened in, I've added up to our listenership numbers. So
the adult is back in the room to impose
no more fun.
His will.
No, it's extra fun. That's where we are. And Michael, how are you doing today, sir?
I am doing peachy keen, and for some reason, I think it was one of the topics we were going to talk about has just kicked in my fan full force on my laptop.
Ooh.
So I have killed it.
For your listening pleasure.
For your listening pleasures. If I was unable to get the fan noise out of the edit, you now know why.
Yeah, well, hopefully my fan noise is calmed down too. But
fan noise. I thought you were talking about our adoring fans.
Our adoring fans.
Both of them.
Oh, I love that. We have got a show and a half for you today, and we're going to start things off all metaverse style, dealing with Facebook from a Tech Dirt article that, Michael, I believe came from you because you find some of the coolest things on the planet here, talking about, what was the phraseology they used here? Facebook's...
web mutton dressed up as a metaverse lamb.
Yes.
Yeah, I like Tech Dirt because they tend to go a little bit deeper into some of the business and business angles and legal angles of some of the stories that we find. And this is really, at a high level, talking about some of the patents that Meta has been putting out that are things that seem to have been around for a while. So it's like, okay, so you've slapped the word... virtual reality onto the patent, and now it's a new thing. And having actually written a couple of patents in the virtual reality world, that's what I did back then too. You take an existing technology and you go, but if I did it in 3D, and then you convince a lawyer to write it up for you, and life is good, right?
Yep. Advertisements and what are they calling it here too? Ad hoarding as well, you know?
Yes.
Now there's nothing wrong with
it's funny because at one level, I know you and I both have a patent in an area that might overlap part of this claim. So we should talk off air and see if there's an angle that we can say, okay, Meta, cough up some dough.
If there's an opportunity. Yeah, you never know. They're probably cross-licensed anyway.
I'm sure.
It's worth taking a look, right?
Yep.
It's worth taking a look. And what I was saying just a moment ago is that there's nothing wrong with mutton either. In fact, mutton was a very common dish for many hundreds of years. And
so was grasshopper.
Absolutely, Sensei. All right, love it. So the next link that we had, well, we started with GitHub, and we were taking a look at the GitHub link, which has like all kinds of cool code in it. And Andy, you pointed out, hey, you know, there's actually an executable to this too. It's not just the GitHub repository. You can go and try out Lemverse. And before you know it, the three of us were trying out Lemverse and almost forgot we had a show to record. What did you find interesting about this environment?
So Lemverse's subheading is the first ever co-working metaverse. And I think I saw all the links somewhere on the internet in the last couple of weeks. And obviously, metaverse is, you know, a buzzword at the moment. You know, it's not like some of us have been talking about and looking at this stuff for over a decade. Happy 10 years of our show. But yes. It was interesting to me because of the co-working aspect. So the idea that, similar to something else I'll mention in a moment that we've spoken about in the past, quite recently, it's really just trying to make the sort of work at home Zoom experience more interactive, more fun, give yourself more of a virtual office space similar to a real office space. But one of the things that also struck me was I've recently watched the WeWork documentary that's on Amazon Prime. You know, this has been very much front of mind for me and recently just thinking about the evolution of these working models and these working practices. Now, Lemverse itself, so we've got a link to the GitHub repo. So it's all open source there and you can go and have a look. What is the license? It's only 6 months old. So it's under the GNU Afro GPL. So not the GPL, sorry, it's the GNU Afro General Public License from the Free Software Foundation. All the code is there. You can stand it up, and if you click through to try it out, you can, you know, the goals here are things like talking with remote colleagues and friends, having virtual conferences, walking around in the co-working office. Obviously, the idea of co-working potentially means that you're going to bump into people that don't necessarily work in your immediate business and so on, more of a sort of hoteling type environment. And
what was the virtual world like this from, I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, yeah, that you could either, yeah, be on a boat,
yeah,
or in an office,
yeah,
thing, and you could lock the door and, mm-hmm, people couldn't come in,
this
or
is,
you could
have a no. This is the first in. This is the first ever virtual co-working metaverse.
It's the first ever, unlike all the prior evers.
This is the first ever co-working metaverse. It's even got Web3 as one of the tags in the topics for the repo. So it must
of
be.
Of course it does.
But seriously, it's very, it visually is quite similar to Skittish that we've played with recently as a group. Mm-hmm. That I also have been very excited about. Interesting, open source. You can play around with it. Really, it was just a convergence of things, right? And topics that we're interested in. It literally has working in the title. And I do think that co-working as a concept, you know, the sort of the idea that WeWork was at its most visionary rather than most sort of fanciful and, you know, and unreal. But the concept of co-working, having a space where you can get together with people from, you know, having those serendipitous meetings, coming up with ideas organically because you're working closely together, but not directly together, you know, all of that sort of stuff I found really interesting. And I do think that it doesn't surprise me to some extent that the WeWork founder was seen as this kind of visionary, very compelling individual. Although watching the documentary, there are obviously a lot of, you know, unrealities crept in many ways. So I just find it fascinating to sort of put these two things side by side and think about them in that context. And I'll shut up now.
We'll have to look it up, Michael. I know we have some show notes out there where we had several of these co-working environments, like you're saying, the boat one and, you know, lock the door. And each of them had some of the features, Andy, that you're just describing too, which are the being tangentially aware, right? Mm-hmm. So are there other people at work right now? Are they approachable or not? Or are they heads down and they're trying to get something done? So there's a number of things like that that I can see where some environment like this is good, and it's better than just having your camera on all the time, because you might like a little more privacy than that.
Privacy?
Yeah. So that you're not just in it, on it, 100% in, on video the whole way, but you can signal that, hey, I'm doing some tasks that if you need to bug me for something, come bug me, right? So, yeah, so Michael, we'll take a look at that. Moving right along, we've got or maybe charging right along, perhaps, for those of you that are basketball fans. We have a link here from our friend Ian from last week's show. For those of you who didn't get a chance to hear that, go back, give it a listen. Shares with us the idea about the Netaverse for the NBA, the Professional Basketball League, using piped in sounds and in-game experiences into their metaverse structure and environment. And reminds me very much, I'm sure this is what Ian was thinking about too, how Wimbledon was brought into Second Life with the Hawkeye ball tracking and. And we've seen some examples of this sort of thing too, where you could be a spectator at a concert or at a ball game, and you could sit wherever you wanted to, and you could experience the game on the court or what have you.
Yep.
So interesting stuff on a lot of levels. Being the big basketball fan that I am, I will have to say that I get very accustomed to a particular view, and I don't like my view getting altered around by the folks in the camera booth to say, oh, let's do the shot of, you know, the through the backboard. It's like, no,
look
no.
over here.
I don't want to watch as if I were transported physically around the stadium multiple times. Give me the view that I can see the game and I can understand the plays and the progression, and just let me go with that. So
didn't you go to a game recently?
I
think I saw a picture of you.
I did. I've been very lucky to be able to do that sort of thing, and I'm glad to see in this COVID time that the mask adherence that's going on is growing. But I would say the compliance is still not where it probably ought to be. But I do my part. So Ian, thank you very much for that particular link. Very intriguing article. Then Ian shares another article with us about Rafe Costner. I originally was going to call him something else.
Raf.
Is Raf or Rafe? Raf?
I think it's Raf.
Talking about a real metaverse as opposed to the unreal game engine. What do you guys think about this?
Well, you know, I've always liked his view of gaming, right? And kind of the way he defined gaming experiences and the different types of virtual worlds, etc. So I have a lot of respect for his opinion on gaming technology. I haven't had a chance to really dig through the article that Ian sent us, having literally just seen it right before we started the show. So I'm going to have to read through it and get through the opinions on it at that time. So I'm looking forward to seeing it, but I don't know. It looks like it's a longer discussion than what I see on the article.
Summary of this story for everybody listening. Man who did stuff with Ultima Online and Star Wars Galaxies said some stuff, so Michael agrees with him.
I did not say that.
Yeah, we probably do need to spend a little bit more time in it, because there are slides here where he describes some of the factors that should be part of the metaverse, singular, encompassing, and based on some user experiences, what people who are operating in the metaverse may or may not actually want. So,
right.
I think we'll need to take this on board and look at it a little bit more, and it might provide some fodder for a future conversation.
This is a really good article, because it takes in that historical context of 40 plus years of online worlds of different types and formats, but online communities.
Well, go all the way back to MUDs, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, he very much talks about that. And, you know, it's not just about that stuff that came up in the earlier article about, you know, virtual advertising hoardings essentially being, which similar to what we built in the past, web pages on prims in Second Life.
Right.
It's much more important to think about the you haven't had a chance to dig into this. You're going to love it. You know, carrying avatar identity across different worlds, and doing a lot of stuff in that space. So it's a really good article. Definitely worth a read on VentureBeat.
Yeah. And we'll definitely bring this back, because there are some points there that I think would be interesting for us to discuss even further. Like, item portability is something that is not actually really needed or desired by a bunch of people. But yeah, so we'll pause on it for now. Ian, thank you for sharing it.
We'll put a pin in it.
Yeah, we'll put a pin in it. We'll come back. And you know, thinking of Ultima for a second, Andy, Lemverse has a lot of Ultima-esque angles to it too.
It does.
Think about
it. It does. Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Next up on the Hit Parade here is another interesting shopping multiverse AR kind of structure here. A little tweet with an associated video of a person who's doing some shopping. And they're looking at some sneakers, and by moving their hand around, the gestures are allowing them to rotate said shoe and look underneath it and select it and choose to buy it if they want to. You can imagine your Aura Ring, Andy, could be a use case for this sort of thing into the future, of bring something from the 2D world into the 3D world.
So are they using, are there any electronics in those rings that they have on their fingers, or are those literally just dots that are being captured by the camera?
I don't know, but I think it's dots, actually.
I think so, too.
Because it looks like mocap kind of a structure to it on a mm-hmm, 3D mm-hmm. printed ring, right?
This is a video embedded in a tweet, which doesn't have a great deal of context around it. So it's actually really difficult to know what this story, what we're looking at in the video. All of those things you've just asked about electronics, how this is working. And then some of the follow-up conversation is pretty negative about, you know, the quality, you know, background idea of this content, where it's come from. It's a shame, actually, because I would like to know a lot more about it, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of context here, which is makes it difficult to comment on.
Well, that's why we do this show, because we like to make sure that we have topics we can't comment on. So go to our webpage and click on the links, and then you can look at them and also not comment on them.
Or create your own ideas. So as long as we're on this front, gosh, did I mess up our show? I lose something?
No,
we're right where we needed to be. Sid Meier. Actually, I didn't know that Sid Meier did flight simulators. I was used to the original Microsoft flight simulators. That's kind of what this reminds me of. And they're now available, the Sid Meier ones, at least on Steam. This looks very much like the original Microsoft ones. Did Sid write those?
No, I do remember F-15 Strike Eagle, and I was talking to Andy before the show. This one looks really familiar. I think I played this one at its original release. So it was not Microsoft.
Yeah, I mean the colors and everything kind of also remind me a little bit of the Apple IIe kind of setup as well.
It's the CGA graphics.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, of
course. That's the color scheme for CGA.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah. Good reminder, Michael. I didn't connect the name Sid Meier with Flight Sims either, but I picked this story up because I think it is exciting to see some of these retro games becoming available. And skipping on to a story we also have here about Microsoft now potentially able to go into vaults of Activision and start picking out stuff from companies like Infocom if they want to, either for, you know, literally giving us the you know, re-releases on modern platforms, or of course using that to build out some kind of rebooted universe from those games or those environments. I think this is all very, very cool.
And from that same article, I thought it was really cool because I hadn't looked at it yet, but I went back to the Infocom cabinet on the Internet Archive, and that was really cool to kind of see kind of the paperwork behind the game design, right? Very, very, very cool.
The ability to have a new lease on life for these old games is tremendous. And I think it's not just for the nostalgic folks that remember doing them. I can see where this may well inspire new creations from current developers and folks that have never seen it before, too. So I'm excited about the full vault coming into play for Activision as well. All right, moving along, we got a couple more things to touch and then we're about done. So I will talk about this one since I brought it in. There is a speedrunner who plays Mario Odyssey, and I've never seen Mario Odyssey before, and I feel bad about that. I should. And he did a speedrunner challenge with a HUD challenge associated with it. And what he did here, and I watched this whole video, is that every 5 minutes or so, he would spin a wheel that would randomly choose a head-up display, and then add it to the screen, and he would have to finish his speed run.
That's outrageous. And,
spoiler alert, he did manage to finish it, but the picture that you can see on the front of the page is just like, you know, there's barely any room in the middle where you could see that the Mario guy would be running around, and it was just so silly to see all these HUDs.
Mario Odyssey is one of the best Switch games. I love it. Very, very good. I do find this amusing. I've watched a ton of game streaming content recently. And a lot of the streamers do come up with these challenges for themselves to make their content, you know, additionally unique or add some kind of additional challenge to it. So I do think it's completely silly, but very entertaining.
And to wrap the shills up, we have an article from The Atlantic that is entitled, Can Medieval Sleeping Habits Fix America's Insomnia? So we know that technology interrupts or can interrupt sleep and can keep people awake for a long time, too. And this was just a very intriguing article for me because I did not realize that there was a concept, a notion in the pre-industrial era of having a first sleep, waking up from that slumber, doing stuff, and then having a second sleep. And it was a fantastic historical treatment of when clocks became so crucial and when artificial light became so readily available that now that forced these two periods of sleep into one long contiguous period of sleep. And it makes sense to me now when I hear that and when I think about the blue light and the other elements of computing, mobile computing and the like, and how that can interrupt you with your messages and your alerts and everything else that might happen in the middle of the night, things you need to do to avoid.
That's really interesting. I hadn't gone into the depth of this article. I must admit, I'm going to have a reread of it after the, after we wrap up here now, but, this is fascinating. I'm always interested, especially as I track my sleep with various wearables, and different apps kind of give me different results in terms of how deeply I've been sleeping at particular points in the cycle and all that sort of thing, because, you know, it's not easy for external things to figure this stuff out. But it's really interesting that, as you say, things like the clocks and our work schedules and all the other things that have sort of driven us to the state that we find ourselves in, which is not necessarily the wrong state to be in. In fact, this says, you know, there's we're actually in, you know, the best state ever in terms of possibilities for sleep. But it's really interesting to see that no time in history have conditions for human slumber been better than today. We've got better beds, blankets, better houses, fewer pests in the middle of the night. We're not going to be woken by a bear. It is really interesting to read. So it's bit of a change of pace for our show, but a fun story. So check it out on The Atlantic.
Well, with that, Andy, Michael, I think we have reached the end of our time together for this week, but tune in again, come back again next week, send us your links, and hopefully you won't nod off during our next recording of gamesatwork.biz.
See ya.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.